is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Former Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak has pleaded not guilty to charges that involve moving funds from a state-owned investment fund to personal accounts. His plea followed what charge of abuse of power and three of criminal breach of trust involving SRC International, a former subsidiary of the State Development Fund, 1MBD, that he founded soon after taking power. He was granted bail at nearly $250,000. Mr. Najib's court appearance comes just 2 months after he was defeated at the polls. Leshina Panikkar is a Malaysian university student.
I did not expect it at all, but hearing this news, I have to be honest, was very pleasing. I'm really glad that it happened because it goes to show how no one truly is above the law.
In Kuala Lumpur, University of New South Wales Professor Emeritus Clive Kessler said the former Prime Minister's election loss led to his eventual ouster.
Had he not lost the election, he wouldn't be in this situation. He lost the situation because people became dissatisfied and unhappy and quite angry about all the things that he did that have led him to be charged as he is being charged at the moment.
Mr. Najib called the charges politically motivated and vowed to clear his name. UN rights experts have charged troops and rebels in Democratic Republic of Congo's Kasai region with atrocities, including mass rape, dismemberment, and cannibalism during a year-long conflict ending last year. The president of the international experts team, Bakre Wale Indaya, said the last months of the conflict involved in an extremely threatening inter-ethnic conflict. His report was presented to the Human Rights Council based on the accounts of hundreds of witnesses, victims, and perpetrators. This is VOA News. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani has insisted the reimposition of U.S. sanctions targeting his country's oil sector will never be able to cut the country's exports entirely. Mr. Rouhani said it's incorrect and unwise to imagine that someday all producer countries will be able to export their surplus oil and Iran will not be able to export any. Monday, the U.S. announced a two-level reimposition of sanctions after pulling out of the 2015 international nuclear agreement with Iran over its destabilizing policies. But Deakin University analyst Sharam Akbarzadeh believes Tehran will still be able to evade some sanctions.
Iran has been able to evade international sanctions even before this nuclear deal and export its oil to Asia. But it's going to make it very difficult for Iran to export its oil, clearly. So I think the damage that the U.S. can do would be substantial, but it wouldn't cut Iran off completely.
Iran and its European partners in the nuclear deal are to meet in Vienna Friday for talks on the way forward following the U.S. withdrawal. The U.N. Security Council is expected to hold an emergency meeting Thursday to discuss the Russian-backed Syrian assault on rebel-held southern Daraa that has forced hundreds of thousands from their homes. The area used to be protected by an internationally arranged de-escalation zone. U.S. spokesperson Heather Nauert lamented the latest violence.
There are ongoing airstrikes. Some humanitarian aid had been stopped. We understand that some humanitarian aid may be getting back in again, at least for now, but it's certainly not a safe situation. So we're continuing to have talks with the Russians. We're continuing to have talks with the Jordanians and express our extreme concern about the situation there.
The matter was discussed between Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in a phone call Tuesday. They also spoke about next week's planned summit between Presidents Trump and Putin in Helsinki. U.S. lawmakers in Moscow met with Russian officials Tuesday, among them Senator Richard Shelby.
I believe Russia and the United States and the world will be a lot better off if we improve our relationship.
Ties have been strained over allegations of Russian meddling in U.S. elections, the annexation of Crimea, and Syria. The rights group Amnesty International said the new government of President Julius Maada Bio in Sierra Leone has failed to restore the right to freedom of assembly and has yet to prosecute police who killed protesters over the past decade. It called on the Bio administration to restore public trust in security forces. In the American West, hundreds of firefighters are battling out-of-control wildfires fueled by low humidity and high temperatures and winds in California and Colorado. The fires have consumed or threatened hundreds of homes, prompting widespread evacuations. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Wednesday, July the 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. Election workers in Mali have extended their strike, a move that casts doubt on the election this month. Analysts say that the election is supposed to chart a way out of 6 years of political unrest and jihadist violence. And the Somalia-based terrorist group Al-Shabaab says that it is banning single-use plastic bags because of the threat they pose to the environment. And the government of Zimbabwe is denying a report from Human Rights Watch. The report documented extensive child labor on the country's tobacco farms.
It's important that the people who employ should be aware that it is not right to employ children who are underage.
Aida Titi Chimeza is programs coordinator of the International Labour Organization in Zimbabwe. She says the issue of child labour persists because of chronic poverty. And South Sudan's government has proposed extending President Salva Kiir's term in office for another 3 years. The armed opposition calls the move illegal as the two sides pursue a peace deal to end a five-year civil conflict.
If the government of South Sudan was to go ahead with such a plan, it would be a setback to the peace process. It would mean that they are not committed to the peace process in which we've been talking to them. It would also mean that they have no respect for the constitution and the rule of law.
Manasseh Zindo is the chairperson of the National Committee for Culture, Youth Empowerment and Sports for the South Sudan's opposition, SPLM-IO. Stay tuned. Those stories, plus our World Cup update, are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And we'll start in Somalia, where the terrorist group Al-Shabaab says that it is banning plastic bags because of the threat they pose to the environment. The extremist group made the announcement through its radio, Radio Andalus, saying that discarded plastic bags pose a serious threat to the well-being of humans and animals alike. The group also banned the logging of native trees. Mohamed Abu Abdallah, the group's governor for southern Somalia, said that details of how the plan would be implemented will be announced later. And in Mali, election workers have extended their strike, a move that casts further doubt on an election this month, an election that analysts say was supposed to chart a way out of 6 years of political unrest and jihadist violence in the country. Mali's government's ability to secure the July 29 vote has been thrown into question by repeated attacks by Islamist militant groups and the tit-for-tat violence between rival ethnic groups in the center and the north of the vast West African nation. And in Nigeria, police say they have rescued the father of national soccer team captain John Obi Mikel after he was kidnapped for the second time in 7 years. Mikel has been playing in the World Cup in Russia, although Nigeria failed to make it out of the group stage. Kidnappings for ransom is a common problem in parts of Nigeria, particularly in the Niger Delta region, the country's oil production heartland, which neighbors Enugu State. Zimbabwe's government is denying a report from Human Rights Watch that documented extensive child labor on the country's tobacco farms. Some of the children are as young as 10 years old, and the report says that many have experienced acute nicotine poisoning from handling tobacco plants. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare for VOA.
The 105-page report titled A Better Harvest documents how children working on tobacco farms in Zimbabwe are denied time in school and have to perform tasks that threaten their health and safety. According to Human Rights Watch, one of the most serious risks is green tobacco sickness which is caused by absorbing nicotine through the skin from tobacco plants. The rights group said the 14 child workers it interviewed and some of the adults said they'd experienced at least one symptom consistent with acute nicotine poisoning, such as nausea, vomiting, headaches, or dizziness. In an interview with VOA, the Secretary for Ministry of Labour and Social Welfare, Ngoni Masoka, said the Human Rights Watch report is not factual and has not been independently confirmed. But he acknowledged that the youngsters face hazards working on Zimbabwean farms.
What we need to do a survey to determine the nature and the extent of the child labor problem in our farms. That's what we want to do.
Masoka noted the problem is not limited to Zimbabwe. Millions of children around the world perform work on farms for little or no pay. Some are helping their families, others are working for low wages. In Zimbabwe, kids on tobacco farms earn less than $10 per day. Aida Tsitsichimedza is programs coordinator of the International Labour Organization in Zimbabwe. She said the issue of child labour persists because of chronic poverty, which she called the key driver of child labour, and the HIV pandemic, which forces children to support themselves when a parent dies. Zimbabwe's government has ratified the ILO convention that calls for the elimination of the worst forms of child labor, she notes. She says employers now have to get the message.
We also talk of sensitization because it's important that the people who employ should be aware that it is not right to employ children who are underage.
Labor Secretary Masoka said the government has a commitment toward eliminating child labor in all forms. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Sudan's People Liberation Movement in opposition, SPLM-IO, has sharply condemned plans by the South Sudanese government to extend President Salva Kiir's term for 3 additional years. The group says the administration proposal could derail efforts by the international community to help end the ongoing conflict. The opposition contends that the move to extend the president's mandate would undermine the ongoing dialogue aimed to resolve the ongoing conflict. The criticism followed a proposal by the government to parliament seeking a measure to extend the president's term, which will enable Kiir to stay in office until 2021. For more reaction, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Manasseh Zindo, the SPLM's IO chairperson of the National Committee for Culture, Youth Empowerment and Sports.
We've received the information through the social media, and if the government of South Sudan was to go ahead with such a plan, it would be a setback to the peace process. It would mean that they are not committed to the peace process in which we've been talking to them. It would also mean that they have no respect for the constitution and the rule of law.
Supporters of the government are saying that this is the right move to ensure the country returns to peace and stability, and President Kiir is the right man to lead the country towards that. So there's need for this extension to help in that process. Why do you disagree?
It cannot be. You know, President Kiir and the regime in Juba are fond of disrespecting the constitution. I can say once or twice the term of his time in office has expired, and he's extended it through the back door. Well, we can say that maybe they took advantage of the crisis in the country, but at the moment we are talking with them, and the talk is at an advanced level. So there would be no need for them to go through the back door, coerce parliament to rubber stamp and extend his term in office. An ideal situation is that they should come to the peace talks where we are, and we should finalize the peace talks, form a transitional government of national unity, which will have the backing of the people, and let the transitional government of national unity embark on the reforms which the country needs, and thereafter we should conduct an election for a credible government to come to power.
Well, Zindo, there are concerns that each time there's a peace agreement signed, it is violated and accusations and counter-accusations are traded by both sides. That is why some suggest that it will be beneficial to the country so that there will be a continuous government in place to administer the affairs of the country. Don't you think so?
It is not the case. There's an institution in place called CITISAM, which is working under JEMEC. This is a mechanism which was put in place through the peace agreement in 2015. Now, CITISAM, every time that there is a violation of the ceasefire, it is the responsibility of CITISAM to go to the location where there has been violation to establish who has violated the ceasefire. And the CITISAM has been doing this. And their report shows who has been violating the ceasefire. So, in fact, what has brought us to where we are is the government's continued violations of everything, including abrogating the peace agreement which we had with them in 2015. We are ready for the peace agreement, not only a peace agreement, but a credible and genuine peace agreement which will bring stability to the country. So what is important now is the government to abandon this belief that, you know, they will win the war militarily. They should abandon this attitude, come to the peace agreement. And I tell you, if they can come to the peace agreement, at the moment we've reached an advanced stage in the negotiations. Some of the sticking issues which we didn't agree on in Addis Ababa, we've already given our views to the Sudanese mediation here, and I am sure they are now compiling their proposal based on the consultation they have had with all the stakeholders. My own impression is that the talks are at an advanced level, so they should come to the peace talks. And if they come in good faith, the way the rest of the stakeholders are, I can assure you that we can reach an agreement in the shortest time possible, and it is what will bring stability to the country.
So what is the next line of action of the SPLM-IO following this move by the government to have the parliament extend President Salva Kiir's mandate for 3 additional years?
As the SPLM-IO, we've not met to discuss this, but I can assure you that we will not accept it, and it will be a setback to the peace process. I would immediately want to call on IGAD and the regional bodies to put pressure on the regime in Juba not to go ahead with such a plan. Instead, they should come to the peace talks. Let us agree on the remaining sticking issues, and let us form a transitional government of national unity, which will bring stability to the country.
Manasseh Zindo is the SPLM's IO chairperson of the National Committee for Culture, Youth, Empowerment and Sports. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty. Over 20 million South Africans are active on the internet, and that number is growing rapidly. But one negative ripple effect is that digital banking fraud is at an all-time high. Scamsters lure victims by telling them that they have qualified for loans or call on them to financially assist fictitious projects. But the latest report by insights agency Columinate does indicate a marked increase in public awareness of various types of fraud. And from Johannesburg, South Africa, Nadia Sami has this report.
Digital banking fraud has been steadily increasing in South Africa over the past few years. That's according to Columinate Insights Agency, which has just released a study about this problem. The organization's Alexander de Koning says, as the consumer and banks increase their security measures, the criminals become more cunning.
Technological countermeasures evolve, so do criminals. You know, and I actually dare say that the criminals, the underworld, is a bit more advanced than some of the countermeasures we've already got in place. And for me, it's literally a case of them probing for weakness to find out where and however they can gain access to your personal information or your bank account details, for instance. If I look at some of the data that we've collected over the last year, you can see that there is a steady rise in consumers' understanding and awareness of some of the threats out there. But that rise also is married to the fact that, you know, we're also experiencing more victims of these crimes.
The study shows South Africans are more aware of cyber criminals and do, in general, take extra care when transacting over the internet. Despite this, 22% of online banking clients still fall prey to criminals over the past 12 months. De Koning says criminals are constantly testing boundaries, walls, and security.
It's so sophisticated. I mean, you could, for instance, a phishing scam, you could be receiving an email from your boss, and it's actually your boss's email address, and you trying to be the diligent employee, click on the link or open the attachment, and it's over. From my own personal experience, I would preach caution and diligence.
Now, tech experts advise users to treat all emails with suspicion, even from senders you know. For example, if you're not expecting a report or presentation from a colleague or friend, call them to confirm the contents before opening attachments. And when making online purchases for the first time, research the company before paying. And always apply a large dose of common sense to any transactions you perform online. For VOA Africa, I'm Nadia Sami.
Days after the Ugandan government implemented a tax on social media users, it is contemplating yet another tax. And this time, it's on international social media corporations like Twitter, WhatsApp, Viber, Instagram, and Facebook. The government also insists that the 200 Uganda shillings per day, or about $20 a year levy, is a reasonable one and that social media users in the country must be able to pay it. Reporter Mugume Davis Gwakarenji files this report from Kampala, Uganda.
David Bahati, Uganda's finance state minister, called a press conference this Tuesday to confirm that the government will not budge about the newly introduced fee on social media and mobile money transactions.
When we propose a tax measure, it must be affordable. It must be reasonable. And we think that 70,000 for a whole year is reasonable for the whole year. That's why we said, let's look at a figure that is not prohibitive, a figure that is not going to be a burden to people. And we proposed 1%, which parliament passed.
President Yoweri Museveni suggested the introduction of the social media tax, stating that citizens use it for a form of rumor mongering referred to as rugambo in a local Ugandan language. The government hopes to raise at least 1.4 trillion Ugandan shillings, or about $400 million in revenues from social media users. He says the money will be used to construct schools, hospitals, and expand road networks, as well as other infrastructure projects in the country. Bahati also says that aside from social media users, the government is working on a law that will require international social media corporations to pay taxes.
You accessing Facebook and WhatsApp give them an opportunity to advertise for other companies. And we are saying even those companies that are making money using the Uganda space are also going to be to make a contribution. And we are working out a mechanism for this.
Member of Parliament Terence Achia agrees.
It will also teach people some lessons. Those who have been using the social media so regularly, so they should have now to control their use of the media or social media. Because if I'm unable to, why should I have to use it? So if I'm capable, then I can use it.
But another parliamentarian, Paul Rutamaguzi Semakula, describes the tax on social media as a double taxation and unfair. He says users already pay for the tax when they buy airtime. He blames voters for voting into leadership bad leaders.
What you sow is what you reap. These are the same people who are singing no change. No change has come to effect. I want to hear them singing no change as they used to sing during the election time. If they are devoted for change, they would have seen change in different sectors.
Several social media users interviewed in the streets of Kampala told VOA yesterday the new taxes on social media and mobile money transactions have affected their businesses. Some citizens also petitioned the Constitutional Court seeking to have the new taxes revoked. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
UN Executive Director Henrietta Fore warns Yemen is on the brink of an abyss as the country's devastating conflict pushes its economy. Fore has just returned from a four-day visit to Aden and Sana'a. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Yemen, which the UN calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis, is likely to get even worse. The United Nations reports 22 million people are in need of assistance, and half of them are children. It says 80% of the population lives under the poverty line. 8.4 million are facing famine, and one child dies every 10 minutes. UNICEF chief Henrietta Fore says more than half of health facilities have stopped working, and others are barely functioning. She says many of the medical staff have not been paid for 2 years, yet they come to work because they know there is a need. She says 1,500 schools have been damaged due to airstrikes and shelling and are closed. Teachers also have not been paid and have stopped teaching the children. Fore says the water and sanitation system is broken, a situation that could lead to a resurgence of cholera and other diseases.
So as you can see, the social protection system, the health, the education, and the water and sanitation are the key elements in any community. And if they collapse, all of us will have an enormous disaster on our hands.
Fore says UNICEF, in partnership with other organizations, is doing its best to keep these vital systems afloat. She reports conditions in the port city of Hodeida are getting worse. The government-supported Saudi-led coalition began fighting in mid-June to wrest this vital port from the Houthi rebels. The UNICEF chief reports 5,000 families have fled their homes in the past 2 weeks. Supplies of basic commodities are dwindling and prices are soaring. She says Hodeida was in the midst of several so-called days of tranquility while she was there. She says this temporary ceasefire was enacted to let peace talks led by UN envoy for Yemen Martin Griffiths continue. Fore tells VOA that UNICEF has asked the warring factions to grant several days of tranquility in mid-July to allow vaccinations for children to take place.
The vaccination program is very important for every aspect of a child's life. The child mortality rates are very high in Yemen, and we need to continue to immunize children, reach out to them with health and basic hygiene services.
The UN reports at least 2,200 children have been killed and 3,400 injured since the Saudi coalition began its air campaign against Houthi rebels in March 2015 in support of the government. UNICEF's Fore says peace is the only way to stop the killings and turn Yemen back into a functioning society. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's it for this Wednesday, July the 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clody and Ricky Shryok, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and I'm wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on the 31st African Union Summit underway in Mauritania. The 2018 theme is Winning the Fight Against Corruption, A Sustainable Path to Africa's Transformation.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.